SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, about 15 minutes in. Johnny D steps to the plate, and Johnny stepped to the plate 14 times at least over the weekend, and find out about his batting average and find out about everything as he sees it post-Breeders' Cup. Johnny, good morning.
Stevie, how are you? Welcome home.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice to be home.
I wish I'd approach this Breeders' Cup like Andy Beyer and just taken a swing in the first race on Friday and either won or lost, because I would have saved myself a lot of work and aggravation the rest of the way.
I love it.
Oh, man. This was the strangest journey for me I've ever experienced on a wagering front for an extended two-day period. It was just... It was so crazy that, you know, I don't know how you can hit the pick six on Friday and Saturday of Breeders' Cup weekend, hit the pick five, the pick four, late pick five, late pick four, on both days, and not end up wealthy. I don't know how you can do that. It was a very unusual Breeders' Cup, and I did that. I hit the pick six both Friday and Saturday. I had a late pick five, late pick four. So the handicapping was very solid. But every move I made vertically was disaster. So it ended up being... made some money, but not what you would expect. If you'd have told someone going in, you know, I'm going to hit the pick six both days in the Breeders' Cup, Friday and Saturday, you'd have been planning the celebration. You'd have been planning the party. It just wasn't that kind of year. And why was that the case? Are we getting better at figuring all this stuff out? We certainly were. I think I certainly was fortunate that the Philly Mare Sprint wasn't in the pick six, because if Shamrock Rose is in the pick six, that's gonna juice things up quite a bit. I don't know if I would have had Shamrock Rose, even though you had her listed, I believe, fifth in your rundown, which I thought was notable. You know, so maybe it's just the way the races fell. Maybe it's that we had a couple of... On the other hand, you know, Newspaper of Record wasn't in the pick six. So, you know, it works both ways. Overall, I have to say, you know, wagering aside, overall, was a fantastic Breeders' Cup. I really did enjoy it. I felt like a little bit too much work for not enough reward when it was all over, but... I enjoyed the process, and we can, you know, if you want, we can run through each race quickly, and I'll just, you know, give you my thoughts and my wagering, you know, how it went. We can just run right through it. I mean, I think starting with the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint, which is now known as the Beyer kickoff race, Bulletin. Yeah, easy, pretty easy to find. I mean, the Exacta, not so easy to find. Chelsea Cloisters, as Andy Beyer said, Soldiers Call, that outstanding race in France, certainly had everyone's attention. But I thought, you know, Todd Putt, you made an interesting comment after the race about Pletcher being the observation all summer was that his horses, 2-year-olds, weren't breaking. and here goes Bulletin in the first Breeders' Cup race. Boom, broke like a shot, and it was all over with the shouting. So I thought that was an interesting comment that you had on Twitter. And also, you know, we were all concerned about the turf. We all had our questions about how things were going to be. And I think the media, both the NBCSN and the NBCSN show at that point, did a really good job. And I think your show did a great job of keeping people in tune. Twitter, of course. These are times when social media really helps. I think I read plenty of stuff that I felt like I had a good idea of what that turf course was going to be like. And the thought that the main track, that track drives out faster than any racetrack I've ever seen, that had been echoed many times on your show. It's been echoed that way from the Derby. We've talked about it many times before. That proved to be true also. There was no concern about the main track. So, of course, I think it was addressed pretty well. And then we saw Bolton handle it. And I think it allayed a lot of fears, you know, that, at that point. But it looked okay. It really didn't look like it was terrible. It looked okay. So anyway, that was the first race on Friday. Second race on Friday, newspaper of record. I mean, she tipped her hand going in to this race that she was special. And now we just know how incredibly special she is. She demolished this field. It wasn't an accident. It wasn't the turf. She handled soft turf, but it wasn't any of that. She is just that good. And it was great to hear Andy Byer compare her to Lady Eli, who, you know, was outstanding in her own right. But we just have to be excited about her. And it was nice to see East, who broke from the 14 hole, and there was certainly plenty of concern about that post position. But then that was kind of offset a little bit by the talk of how the turf course was a little better outside. So, you know, seeing the filly from the 14 hole run well, at least finish second, and East, who had been touted by Jeff Siegel, was high on East leading into the Cup. I can't remember where you had her exactly, if you had her at all. Let's see. Yeah, you had her fourth, I believe, in your pick. So East was a contender. It was nice to have verification that someone could break from the far outside, run well over the course, overcome the post. That kind of set the stage for later. The seventh race, which was the Juvenile Fillies Jaywalk. Boy, I'll tell you, I miss handicapped this race, and I saw it like I thought there was more speed in here. I knew Jaywalk was fast. I didn't quite know she was that fast.
Right.
She just went to the front. She just dominated things. You know, and your comment earlier today about, well, you know, they kind of let her go. You know, sometimes horses just, they're doing it easy, and the other guys don't have that artillery. Their horses aren't as fast. And I think that's what happened here. I think Jaywalk is really quick, and she just got out there, and there really wasn't other speed in the race. But I didn't kind of realize that until very late as I was looking at the race, right before it kind of went into the gate. And I think this race, you know, pretty much went to form. Restless Rider, you know, finished second. And someone asked me right after the race, well, who's the Juvenile Philly champ? Is it Jaywalk or is it Newspaper of Record? Traditionally, turf fillies have been snubbed, but yeah, I don't know, this year that's going to be interesting, as well as the Horse of the Year discussion. So moving on to the eighth race, Line of Duty. This is a well-fancied European runner in this race. I don't think the 10-1 line was probably a little bit strong, was solidly bet from the opening click. This Charlie Appleby, at this stage, you're like, man, this guy is just, he only brings over the ones that can win Breeders' Cup races. Really, really impressive. William Buick, again, shows what an outstanding rider he is. Uncle Benny, Jason Service, getting up for second. That was kind of interesting. Took the money. Uncle Benny took some money. Again, maybe the line a little bit too strong for his chances in that race. But nice to see that a European on the board. We get, a U.S.-based runner finishing second. I think a pretty respectable result there. Anthony Van Dyke, probably, and you know what else? I mean, the ones that the Europeans that I had notes on that someone, whether it was Nick Luck, whether it was something I read somewhere in a European rundown, whether it was an interview with a trainer, all my notes in cases where it said a European would like firm better or would prefer firmer going, those cases seem to work out. I can't think of a case where there may have been one, maybe, but that's pretty good when you can say that throughout the day. I had notes on many of these horses about whether they would like the turf or not, and firmer, better, or favoring soft as a positive. But those all seem to work out. So I don't know if you noticed that too. If you agree with that, but of course you didn't have the same notes I had. But
well, for the most part, and that conversation first started on Tuesday when Nick Luck stopped by when I was talking to Darren Rogers, and we expanded that conversation. That's actually something Andy Serling has talked about for years, which is that, the assumption is, oh, the Euros are coming, and oh, the turf is going to have give, and oh, they're going to love it, except that the connections are generally looking and expecting firmer turf, and that's why the horses come over here to begin with. And so they might not necessarily like it. Alan Schubach used to always admonish me whenever I would say that the German horses seem to like soft going, Maduro and those, I think about Scirocco, and there was always that axiom that they, the Germans got over soft turf, and Schubach used to go crazy when I would say that. But it's an interesting discussion, and I did hear, I think it was Ollie Bell that may have brought out, and a couple of the other British journos that said on Saturday that they did not think, by the time we got to the juvenile turf, that or Friday, that Anthony Van Dyke was going to like the going, and I heard that way too late to make any major changes. But frankly, Johnny, there were three horses that had to be used in there. Anthony Van Dyke, Line of Duty was the obvious, better drawn runner, and Uncle Benny, and this was a recurrent theme over the 14 races that you basically could confine your approach to the most logical contenders, and you generally did fine if that was the way you approached it.
Yeah, and that's exactly how a guy can hit a relatively formful pair of pick sixes, and yet on his straight and exotic bets, not cash hardly any, because there were three or four horses that you could say, well, this race is this horse and this horse and this horse, and that's it, and that's your pick six. But when it came time to say, well, who are you going to bet, and you made your step up and you bet your exacta and you key this one horse with two or three other horses, and that horse doesn't win, you lose. So it was that's how you could get away with it. You say, well, he handicapped really well. He hit two pick sixes. Well, it was that kind of card. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. Game winner, he did exactly what I think what we what most of us expected. He was a heavy favorite. He bobbed back from 2 year old. Your comment about the blueprint for Saturday's race was a pretty good observation. I thought you talked about that earlier in the show. There was plenty of pace in the race to me. It seemed like he would get, you know, that drop in from the outside kind of trip and stalk a little bit. Mick Stowe for second. I didn't see it. I kind of thought of him more as a speed type horse. And, you know, when an upset happens in a major race at a huge price, I think there's a tendency to kind of discount that effort or discount the overall race because a big priced horse upset the field. I think there was a little of that involved with me, and that's why I missed that race. A couple of people didn't miss that race, and that was in the wagering guide. Brent Musburger didn't miss that race. Brent Musburger contributed. He had a $10 exact apart wheel, game winner over Code of Honor, who scratched, of course, and Nick's Go. So that was nice, and they had a 20 win in place on game winner. That was in the updated version of the guide. And then in the original version of the guide, Jerry Schottenkirk, Express Bet handicapper, he had 40 to win on game winner, and he had also a $10 jack to part winner, game winner over Code of Honor, who scratched, obviously, and Nick's Go. So a couple of nice scores there Friday for the guide. But, you know, so that ended what was, geez, you know, a very enjoyable, you know, Future Stars Friday. And I think that formula worked. You know, I wondered, when it first was announced, I wondered how it would go. But I like moving the distaff back to Saturday, where, you know, it belongs in the major day. And the two-year-old Stars of Tomorrow, Future Stars, it's nice seeing them all on one day. I kind of thought that worked out pretty well.
John, and I completely agree. And you know, the day got nicer as we went. We're gonna slip John Service in here, Johnny, and sit with us, and we'll perfect the opportunity.
Don't you dare. Is he on the line now?
No, Casey's getting him now, and you can give him the business when he joins us. The You very well could have had the Service double, the Jason John double, had Uncle Benny prevailed. And Uncle, you know, I made the suggestion, you know, you heard Andy Beyer talk about, you know, the perceived or the discussed portion of the turf course, the inner paths once they took the rails down. And we discussed this plenty. You know, some people suggesting that it gets very boggy the closer you get to the hedge. And, you know, it made me kind of speculate. Jay Hovde admonished me that I had the nerve to suggest that maybe if Uncle Benny was on the outside of line of duty, that maybe he, prevails. But certainly Drayden Van Dyke's performance, actually that's Stormy Liberal, certainly line of duty's effort, there were about three or four of those kinds of duels to the wire. There was also a parade, more or less, led by Jaywalk to the wire for John Service, and John joins us now. And John, we got Johnny DeSantis hanging around here too. So good morning and congratulations.
Good morning, gentlemen. How we doing?
John, I was just telling Steve that I'm a little bit offended. My time was cut short here by your appearance. And
call back if you want me to, John.
No, it's okay. You go ahead.
The big question, of course, you know, I guess once you've won a Kentucky Oaks, I guess for the owners, it's not all that important to show up for a Breeders' Cup at Churchill Downs, because Chuck Zackney, he was over in Ireland, and he couldn't even bother to show up.
You know, I think that really bothered him, too. I think he really wanted to come bad. You know, but he had made a commitment with some friends of his quite a while ago, and, you know, kudos to him. He stuck to his commitment.
Well, he enjoyed it, actually, at Parks, I understand. He got back within a couple of hours from Ireland and hustled over to Parks to watch it with, I'm sure, a delighted throng.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he came to the track or if he went to the OTB part. I think he might have went to the parlor.
Oh, by the air part down on Packer Ave.
I think. I'm not sure which one.
All right. Well, the for you and for the DJ team that was on hand and everybody, you know, John, stretching out to two turns, that was really the equation. Cross traffic out of an orientate mare, some thoughts going in, and then your thoughts as they went around.
I mean, I felt really good going into the race. You know, as a matter of fact, I talked with John Green about it and Chuck both, and you know, I told him, I said, look, she couldn't be doing any better. It's just a question of if she's good enough to outrun those fillies. I mean, there's some good fillies in there, and I guess we'll find out. So that's the way we felt going in, and you know, I was surprised that she went to the lead again, but you know, she did it fairly easy, which really surprised me, because I thought that Amos's filly would be right up there close, and we were just going to try to sit off of her. But when she went in the first turn, she started pricking her ears and relaxed so nice. You know, I felt pretty good about it.
Well, and you really hit the key, considering that Rosario, you know, who had ridden her in the Frisette, and it was obvious. I mean, he is so good with that kind of a horse. He he's thought of, I think, as more of a stalk or off the pace type rider. But when he is in front with this kind of horse, he is as good as there is, because he's very quiet. And you could tell she was just relaxed as can be. And then all of a sudden, everybody else gets desperate.
And that's it. I mean, she has a tremendous cruising speed. I mean, they were setting down some pretty good fractions now. And, you know, when he was still sitting coming to the head of the stretch, I knew she was going to give him a little kick. You know, I didn't know she was going to give him a kick like that. But, you know, I think the combination of a few of those fillies that tried to run with her early had taken its toll, and McPeak Philly made a big move on the turn and rolled up there, and then she just drew away from her.
Very much, and wins off by 5.5. Actually, it goes faster than the boys went an hour later.
I actually, Will texted me this morning and said that she ran one number higher than actually game winner ran on the buyer. I think game winner was a 93, and she was a 94.
Correct. That's correct.
Yeah, I've got a question for Mr. Service.
Go ahead, John.
John, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you very much.
It's tremendous. It's tremendous. I'm so happy. So now you got to find one of these for Schwartz.
There you go.
So we can make him happy.
Nothing would make me happier. You know that.
Listen, what about training at Parks? I mean, we had an Imperial Hint also in the Breeders' Cup. What about training at Parks? Is that, you think, made a difference training over that surface?
I think it definitely makes a difference. Girardi asked me the same thing earlier in the week, because he had asked me when we were coming out, and I said, you know, I'm not coming out till Monday. And he said, well, you know, are you gonna breeze out here? I said, no, I'm doing all my work at Parks, because we have a really deep racetrack, and you know, these horses are really benefiting from it. And I'll tell you, they're staying sound. I mean, knock on wood, horses are staying healthy, and you know, outside horses are coming in here and running and are really up against it, because they haven't been training over this track. And our horses are coming off this racetrack and going everywhere and running really well. So I wanted to stay here until, you know, until I had to be out there, and then that's what we did.
Well, she just was one of the most dominant performers. She and City of Light, probably the two, you know, most imposing performances on the 2 days. And John, lay out the plans, and you know, talk about obviously circling, you know, the first Friday in May for the Oaks. You know how to plan for one of those.
Well, we flew her to Palm Meadows yesterday. And she's there right now. We're just gonna let her down a little bit for probably about 4 or 5 days. You know, just walk her in the shed under tack and put her in the round pen, you know, for an hour or so, and then in probably about five days to a week she'll head to Ocala, and we'll let her be a horse for about 30 days, and then we'll bring her in and we'll start cranking her up again for that 3-year-old campaign and figure out what's the best way for us to get her to the Oaks healthy, happy, and faster than she was this year.
So basically the Catherine Sophia plan.
You know, yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't see why not.
How does this win, by the way? How does this compare to the Oaks wins and Derby wins and Preaknesses?
Well, you know, I hate to compare them because they're so huge, but this is one I really, really wanted because I've never won a Breeders' Cup, and I felt that I had the horse to win the Breeders' Cup in 2000 when I went, and she just kind of tailed off on me while we were there and wasn't really doing great, and subsequently probably cost her the Eclipse Award, but not having a Breeders' Cup and having the Derby and the Oaks and the Preakness, you know, it was something I really wanted, you know, and I wasn't going to try it unless I had the horse. And I felt she was the horse to make a big shot with it. So it felt really good. It was something that I've been wanting for a long time.
I bring this up every time another filly emerges in your care, and you know, you refer to a horse like Jostle and Round Pond. you know, you even yeah. I mean, who else? We've had Catherine Sophia. We've talked
Joy
about
Return, Catherine Sophia. We've had some nice fillies.
It's kind of funny. I mean, not that your work with males, Rockport Harbor and Smarty and so forth, speaks for itself. But it is funny that you seem to know when you've got a talented filly, you know, where to go, what to do, and how to execute with them.
Well, I real quick, I'll tell you a funny story. We're at Churchill, and I think it was the day before the Breeders' Cup, and I'm standing in the barn, it's raining, and Girardi and I are standing there talking, and this English gentleman kind of ducks in underneath the barn, and he starts talking to me, and he goes, "Are you a trainer?" And I said, "Yes, sir," and I told him who I was, and he said, "You got a horse running the Breeders' Cup?" And I said, "Yes, sir," and he goes, "Have you ever run in a big race?" And I said, "Yes, sir. I've run quite a few of them." He goes, "Like what?" I said, "Kentucky Derby." And he goes, "How'd you do?" I said, "I won." And he goes, "Really?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "Kentucky Oaks." And he goes, "How'd you do?" I said, "I won." He goes, "Really?" And I go, "Yeah." And he goes, "You know what? You come across to me like one of those low cock and aim trainers." And I didn't want to comment for a second, and then it hit me, and I started laughing. I go, "Yeah, I guess you could call it that." I said, "You know, I don't like to come to these kind of races unless I feel like I got a loaded gun." So he leaves, and the gentleman that was doing the notes for the week was about, I don't know, 50 yards away from him, and I see him talking to him. He comes walking over to me, and he goes, "You want to hear something funny?" And I said, "What's that?" He said, "The guy you were just talking to for about 15 minutes." I said, "Yeah." He said, "He just came over to me and said, what's that guy's name again?" He goes, "Who is that train?" Oh, God. It was funny. So I'm going to use that. Load, cock, and aim. That's what we're going to do.
It was a happy, you know, obviously all these winner circles are happy, but there were a number of people in there that, including Aaron Yagoda, and Aaron was delighted for him. He was thrilled and would Chuckle have his chances, obviously, and you know, talk about the DJ team and Ron Anderson and Joel as well.
Well, I mean, Joel and Ron Anderson had a tremendous weekend. But for the DJ team, you know, we've been together off and on for probably, God, I know it's been at least 20 years. And we've had a lot of success together, but never anything, you know, this big. The Frisette was only their second grade one win. So that was very exciting and a big accomplishment for them, and everybody was tickled. And then to have the filly come right back and win the Breeders' Cup like that, I mean, it was just, you know, they've been so gracious to the business and have put a lot of money and a lot of sweat equity into the game over the years. You know, over probably 30 years in the business, and you know, it's Leonard and Lois Green, and then their son Jonathan, and Jonathan manages the operation, and. You know, they've been great. I mean, they've been solid in the business. In the very beginning, they were a huge claiming outfit. You know, started claiming a few horses and ended up probably with 35 horses, maybe 40 in the claiming game. And then, you know, progressed into the sales and started buying better horses. And they've had some really nice horses, but just not those grade one horses yet.
Well, this also for you now between this win, with this win, yeah, this is now your second best year in earnings. Obviously, with the bonus and everything else that went on with Smarty, it's, you know, that those numbers will be difficult to duplicate. But your second best year, John, in the game, in your career.
This game's been so good to me. I mean, I'm very fortunate. I get to train for some great people. And you know, I was fortunate at a very young age to know what I wanted to do. I grew up right next to the racetrack, and I decided I wanted to be a horse trainer early on. So I jumped in there and got my hands dirty from the get go and worked my way up. And you know, we put together a nice stable of horses, and I have some great owners that support me and back me and let me do, you know, let me be patient when I want to be patient. And let me pull the trigger when I want to pull the trigger, and it's paying off.
Yeah, pays off in your first Breeders' Cup win, and Jaywalk, big. It's a big win for Gainsway too. Anthony Beck was there, and Gainsway obviously a big benefit, and they bred Jaywalk and Cross Traffic, first Grade One winner for him.
Yeah, they. I didn't really get a chance to talk to them much, but I know the Spendthrift guys with Cross Traffic, they were ecstatic. I mean, they were tickled to death after the Frisette. And Mark Toothaker came by the barn and looked at her and, you know, was really excited and dropped off a couple jackets for the help and all. So it's a big boost for Cross Traffic.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Steve, I just wanted to, before you let John go, I wanted to thank him for helping me cash one of the few tickets that I did cash during the Breeders' Cup. I cashed the head-to-head service wager. I took John against Jason to win a Breeders' Cup.
Let me tell you something. That is a shame in itself, because Uncle Benny should have won that race. That would have been... That would have been a carbon copy of the Frisette and the other race at Belmont that day, where Jason won the race before, and then I won the race right after, and then when Jaywalk ran, Uncle Benny was in the race right after that, and unfortunately just had a horrible trip, and you know, had a shot to get put up on the objection, but didn't. But that would have been something. My father would have been hard to hold down after that.
Well, great showing on all fronts. World of Trouble, of course, too. for Jason on Saturday. Unbelievably game effort. Ran too good to lose as well. John, delighted for you and everybody involved. We're going to have to reach out later in the week to Chuck Zachney and get his reaction too.
Well, I know Chuck will be tickled to death. I mean, he texted me a couple times, and I finally got a chance to get back to him because, you know, it was pretty hectic afterwards, and you have the press conference and everything. So I got back to him, and I got to talk to him. I walked out of the winner's circle, and my phone's blowing up, and I just happened to look down at my phone. I had 128 text messages walking out of the winner's circle.
It's the best. It's the best. John, thank you so much. Continued success and one of the highlights from Friday and from a terrific Breeders' Cup.
Steve, Johnny, you guys, thank you very much. And, Johnny, you get a chance. Take a peek at the joint return last night at the sale. She sold pretty good.
What'd she go for? I didn't.
$825,000.
Very nice.
Wow.
Very nice.
In full the Medaglia Dior.
Very nice.
Yeah.
And sale was an absolute bonanza, obviously. And how they were able to do the numbers they did after last year when Songbird and last year's numbers were outlandish enough, and then to come back and duplicate. To duplicate and exceed last year's numbers was pretty impressive.
The market's very strong.
Strong. The top end particularly. Well, and of course, Keeneland picks up today. In fact, they're starting, I think they started noon, I think, today. John, thanks so much. Continued success.
Steve, John, you guys take care of yourself. Thank you.
John what Service, everybody. Success. Really, always nice to talk to and congratulate. That's a great story. Have you run in any big races before? Yes. I ran in a Kentucky Derby and a Preakness and a Belmont. Johnny, let's continue. Let's get into Saturday. We got about 10 minutes or so. We're going to also talk to Chuck Grubbs about his BCBC win.
Yeah, I want to hear all about that. Well, Saturday we started off with the way we kind of hoped things would go. We had this big bomber, Shamrock Rose, take the Philly and Mare sprint. And it kind of, kind of symbolic of my journey. I had Chalone, who I'd settled on just before the race. I thought, look, this is a nice price play to just kind of try and cash a ticket here. And couldn't get her home. Shamrock Rose, 53.80, and we're off and running on Saturday, and we're ready for the bombs to start coming in. And then we get World of Trouble, finishing second. Stormy Liberal winning the turf sprint, well in front of Disco Partner. You heard Andy Beyer talk about that earlier this morning, about the amazing figures, Beyer figures, and how they arrived at it. I think they were like seven and change lengths in front of Disco Partner, was one of the U.S.-based runners in the race who was not supposed to like soft ground. And I know as we got to Saturday, the ground was reported as being much better. But still, you have to think Disco Partner would have been a lot closer on firm ground. The race would have changed completely, I think. But anyway, these are things. It's important to listen and gather as much information beforehand so you can lose intelligently, like I did this weekend. I guess I didn't do too badly. I didn't get killed. Anyway, the fifth race, the Dirt Mile. No, here's a case where, two California runners hooked up. Although Catalina Cruiser, you had to start to feel a little pain for John Sadler at this point when Catalina Cruiser didn't fire. John Sadler's an excellent trainer. There's no question about his ability. This Breeders' Cup zero that he had in front of the starters is just a freak of nature. But when Catalina Cruiser didn't show up, you had to think to yourself, oh, man. And he's got the favorite in the Classic, and, oh, man, it's got to be terrible. City of Light, outstanding race. What an impressive performance. He's been a quality horse all year. He's shipped around to different tracks. He's proved his ability. He's going to the Midwest. He's going to the East. He's done it in the West Coast. Great season for City of Light. I'm happy for Michael McCarthy and certainly for Javier Castellano, but it's nice to see a fine young trainer like Michael knock down a Breeders' Cup early in his career, and the sky's the limit for this young man. Fabulous young trainer. Then Sister Charlie, filly mare turf, Chad Brown. Sure, he had a lineup stacked. Wild Illusion gave us what we thought. Absolutely logical European, most solid European in the race. I think this was very formful. The formful day continued. Sister Charlie, man, she's been great all year. And the missed race and I think it was the hook bruise, if I'm not mistaken. It just shows you what a fantastic trainer Chad Brown is. To get these quality runners, yes. Does he get good horses? Yes. But he absolutely knows what to do with them. She's a fabulous example of that, as is Newspaper's Record, as is his other Breeders' Cup wins. You know, he's got a bunch of Breeders' Cup wins. I think he's third right now. I mean, he's a young man. If he continues the way he started, he could blow everyone out of the water. We come to the seventh race. Roy H., Peter Miller coming back with two more wins. You addressed it earlier. Outstanding achievement for him. Roy H. got the perfect trip. It was just absolutely, I thought Promises Fulfilled would show speed. Did. There was plenty of speed. I thought from the outside, Roy H. would sit close up and manage to take over. I thought this one was very formful. Whitmore, closing to get second. Well done in there. I think that one went according to Hoyle. Expert Eye, Michael Stout, Frankie Dettori. There was a little bit of concern with the turf, but again, by Saturday late in the day, it was kind of firming up a little bit. It wasn't as bad, certainly, as Friday. Catapult, again, John Sadler, almost getting a win, which would have been so unusual, because John has been known as a dirt trainer throughout his career. He's never been really known in California as a turf route trainer. That's kind of not, he's not had those kind of horses. And here, if he would have won his Breeders' Cup maiden with a turf runner at a mile, it would have been kind of like Bobby Frankel cracking his Breeders' Cup slump with a dirt sprinter, because of course Bobby could train any kind of horse, so can John Sadler. But what Bobby was famous for is long turf runners, and what John's favorite for is dirt runners. To have them break their Breeders' Cup maidens on the opposite surface would have been fitting, but Catapult doesn't get up. Drayden Van Dyke, a young jockey I've talked about on the show many times, and you've had on the show several times. Fabulous young rider. He broke his Breeders' Cup maiden this year. Now he's second with Catapult also. Frankie Dettori, one of the all-time great riders in our sport, entertaining, enjoyable, fun for the fans, a real character, and a fabulous, fabulous world-class rider, one of the greatest of all time. You go to the ninth, Monomoy Girl, what a season she's had, just absolutely incredible. Wildcat running second. Wildcat had a lot of pushes on your shows. Scully, Shapiro, I think you even talked about Wildcat. Easy to see Wildcat run a good race for, again, Chad Brown. Monoy Girl, great job by Brad Cox, who's joining the roster of top conditioners this year. Made a heck of a comeback to restock his barn. I'm going to run through these last ones, but Enable, what a pleasure it was to watch her perform. John Gosden, I'm so happy for him. A real gentleman, fabulous, world-class trainer, one of the best trainers in the world. Frankie Dettori, I've already sung his praises here. Magical, Ryan Moore, a fabulous jockey. Magical, Aiden O'Brien, hooking up in the stretch, but Enable, just too good. Such a pleasure to see those two do battle, and especially Enable come to this country, do what she did. And finally, Accelerate in the last race. So wonderful to see John Sadler win his first Breeders' Cup race. Joel Rosario, cap a fantastic weekend for my good pal agent Ron Anderson. They had an outstanding, even though they didn't win the award based on points. I don't think anyone had a better Breeders' Cup weekend than these guys, and looking toward the future. And, a little sympathy goes out to Victor Espinoza, whose mouth this was originally and was injured. And, you know, that's kind of, you just feel for Victor sitting there watching this race. But you're also, on the other hand, you're happy for the people who did get to enjoy victory. When you look back at this race, Gunnar Vera, what an outstanding run to be second. Gunnar Vera, finally, Antonio Santos got this one hit, and all the issues maybe are behind him, and we're going to see the real Gunnar Vera, a great, great effort in the Breeders' Cup Classic. I guess the three-year-olds perhaps they're not really a fine crop this year. They needed to stand up in this race. None of them did, although you got to take your hat off to Mendelsohn. He shows up and fires again early, and he hangs around to be fifth in this race. West Coast retired. Yoshida, a nice performance to pick up some pieces, but hats off to Accelerate. What a fantastic year he's had. The discussion is going to be great about Horse of the Year. I'm happy for John Sadler again. I really want to emphasize that. And on to the Pegasus Cup.
Well, Johnny. No, it's good, and I appreciate it. The you mentioned Pegasus, and there is going to be quite an assembly, it seems, in terms of the potential for not just rematch but remix. There's even chatter the Monomoy Girl will consider it, but Accelerate, Yoshida, Gunavera, Seeking the Soul. I mean, those are just some of the names already, and Andy Beyer seem to lean toward Accelerate. What's your immediate gut feel for a Horse of the Year vote?
It's a tough, really tough one, because Accelerate has had an outstanding season. A Triple Crown winner is something else in our game. It is it's the crowning achievement. It was around before the Breeders' Cup. It was around before anything. And, we waited 36 years for a Triple Crown winner. Okay, now we've had two in relatively short succession, but it's always been kind of a defining bar. This is one we're going to have to think about. We're really going to have to think about it. I think, my gut reaction, my immediate reaction is I go with the Triple Crown and justifies accomplishment to jump into the mix as late as he did and do what he did in such a short period of time. To me, is a positive, not a negative. even though now we look at the three-year-old crop and say, well, maybe, I don't care. Just the accomplishment alone was notable. If you're going to say to me, well, what about Accelerate? Fantastic season. The grade went, he shipped to Kentucky. He got out of California. He won our richest race next to the Pegasus. But Triple Crown winners are special. Until Triple Crown winners aren't special, they're special. And they're still special to me. So. That's where
absolutely
I'm at right now,
and that's what it's going to come down to, and it's going to be a very interesting conversation, and it all is going to be on the personal level of how people view the horses. So, Johnny, I appreciate it.
An accelerate crew's not going to go empty-handed.
No, they're going to. No, they're obviously that. They're the older dirt horse winner already, and that that was pretty close to wrapped up, but. We'll see. We'll see where this goes. It should be a fun. Should be something to discuss between now and near the end of December.
So who's your two-year-old filly?
That's another discussion. I didn't even. It's Jaywalk. To me, it's Jaywalk, and I'm certainly wowed by. And I voted for Lady Eli. I've done this before, and advocated on the turf side. But I think the Jaywalk's resume. It's a little bit more concrete for that debate.
I was going to vote for Jaywalk until service interrupted my time on your show.
Actually, he didn't. He just interjected. He didn't interrupt because you got your full time in.
Stevie,
Johnny,
great fun. We move on. What's the next case? Oh, carryover in the Magna 5. Quietly. Oh, and then we didn't even talk about Santa Anita. Carry over to Magna 5 next Friday. Stay tuned. What do we got?
Oh, so they it forced. I thought it was supposed to be the last, but it forced one.
$51,000. Nobody had five. $51,000 carryover November 9th, which I assume is Friday.
It is.
We had $108 winner, Santa Anita, to kick it off. Lost in all the hubbub.
Well, and yesterday, finally, you mentioned the force out of the jackpot, jackpot pick six at Santa Anita. It went the way it should go with four favorites, five favorites, and a third choice, and so $600. And so everybody that put in on it gets something back, assuming they were able to put those six winners together. So that it seems at Gulfstream, there's always some ridiculous, preposterous, idiotic horse that ruins it for small bettors. As it is, the whole bet and the concept is grotesque. But at least everybody got a chance to get money back yesterday.
Well, they went their beach. They went their beach.
Johnny, not a bad cup. And we will keep talking about winners, including the BCBC winner. He joins us next. Chuck Grubbs. He's been a guy that was involved heavily with the harness side, and he takes home the big prize in the BCBC. Chuck Grubbs next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.